Oh yeah, good morning everybody. Greg Rice filling in for my good buddy, my pal, Emilio DeSpirito. And this morning, leading off out of the box, we got Mr. Paul Salcone from North Point Bank. Paul, how's it going?
Good, how's it going today?
Good, good. And we're going to talk today about portfolio loans, right? And some other programs that are geared towards the investors, okay? And also the self-employed. So what's going on with that?
Sure, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, as you know, in this market, obviously, you know, everyone out there, it can be challenging at times for certain clients. You know, obviously not everyone checks all the boxes for conventional or FHA financing for that matter. So, you know, I always say to myself, what do we have for the people that maybe are strong clients, but maybe have different ways of showing their income or showing their, you know, their value to the banks and to the lenders? So we have what's called portfolio financing. And for anyone that doesn't know what portfolio financing means, essentially that is loans that a bank or institution lender that they hold in house. They almost create their own guidelines. And then they keep these loans with their own, you know, own funds on their books. So because of that, they can go outside the box with what their, you know, requirements are. So, you know, you mentioned investors, you mentioned self-employed borrowers, you know, what can we do for them? So I always start with the investors. I feel in this market, a lot of people out there are looking to buy, you know, properties either to keep as investment properties for long term, or maybe as a flip and sell 6 months down the road. Who knows? But for those people, what can we do? I mean, there's always hard money, which we can use. But again, instead of hard money, why not go with something that's on the books, 30-year fixed rate program? So one of the most popular is called the DSCR loan. Most people have heard of these loans. I'm actually doing a few right now as we speak. It's a debt service coverage ratio loan. Essentially what it is, it's for an investor, can't be owner occupied, 1-4 unit property where we'll take what fair market rent is or what the actual lease agreements in place are on the property to qualify. So what I mean by that is, let's say it's a 3-unit property in one socket. And let's just say, for sake of this argument, fair market rent is $1,500 per unit. So you have a 3-unit property in one socket at $1,500 per unit, times the three, that's $4,500 a month is what that property brings in. As long as the new mortgage with us, with principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, as long as that payment is at $4,500 or less, you are approved for the loan. All we look at is your credit score. You can go as low as 620. Down payment, it has to be at least 20% down. But again, any investment property out there, when you look at conventional, they require 20, 25% down or more. So it's very common. So it's a way to get you in a property without having to deal with any, okay, income. What are you showing your tax returns, pay stubs? I don't need any of that. All I need is to run your credit and verify the source of the down payment. Nothing else. So you can imagine someone, even yourself, who does, you know, investment properties or into this, you can see why this would be something that would spark some interest, especially with hard money. I mean, it's a great option, but hard money can be more expensive. So that's the first program, Greg. You know, what are your thoughts on this, in this type of portfolio product?
Well, you got my attention at 20% down, Paul. That's, most lenders are doing 25, or I've heard up to 35% down.
Correct. And that 20% down can be used up to a 4-unit. So keep that in mind. I mean, a lot of times you hear, oh, maybe a single family, they'll make an exception. But on a 3 or 4 unit, it's 25 to 30%, 35% down typically. So this could make some sense. And one other thing I wanted to mention about the program at North Point is that while we offer these, we'll do up to 7 properties total in your portfolio, up to $3 million. So you can do this numerous times, and we only look at the property, the subject property, or nothing else. So it's a way to get yourself a good portfolio. Obviously, you have to have some money down, of course, but you can get yourself a good portfolio without showing a lot of income on the books, and it's a way to get in these houses, you know, without going through a lot of the red tape sometimes you deal with in other programs. So, so that's one of the programs I wanted to mention today, I think is, you know, great. Something else, you know, I wanted to touch on briefly was self-employed borrowers. Now, obviously, in this market, a lot of people own businesses. They have they file what's called a Schedule C on their personal returns, or they have what's called a 1120S for S-Corps or partnerships. So there are people out there that have businesses. And, you know, sometimes you have a good year, you have a bad year, but all of a sudden, you know, 1 year, because it's a lower year, they take a 2-year average typically. So that could skew the numbers. So what do we do for these, you know, self-employed borrowers who have businesses, who've done well traditionally, maybe had one tough season? So what we'll do is we'll look at something called the two common ones I look at most often I find that are interesting. One's called the bank statement program. Mm-hmm. And with this bank statement program, we'll look at either a 12 or 24 month average. So say, for example, you own a pizza parlor, you have a landscaping company, and let's just say your tax returns maybe don't show a ton of income after some of the expenses, but you can show us each month you deposit X and Y dollars. We'll look at a 12 or 24 month bank statement history of what you deposit. And then based on the profession, there's certain percentages that we use based on what we anticipate profit margins are. And we'll look at that. Okay, so let's say it's 50%. Okay, so whatever you deposit over 24 months, we divide it, you know, we figure it out, and then we take 50% of that figure and we use that, we make that as income. That's what we translate that into income. And we'll use it. It's a 30-year fixed rate program. So it's something that, you know, you could still get into a mortgage. The rates, honestly, might be 1% higher at most than what traditional mortgages are. So not a huge difference. You know, obviously a little bit of a difference because risk is, you know, obviously a little bit higher, but it's a way to get people into these programs and to in houses that maybe don't on paper qualify. So that's the bank statement program we have for 12 or 24 months. The other program we have, this one is more, I would say self-employed, but also more for people that are like entrepreneurs or people that maybe retired early. Let's say, for example, you have a decent amount of money in that. It's called asset depletion. So let's say, for example, you know, you retired at 55 and you want to buy a second home or maybe buy another home. But now the only income you show on paper might be, you know, you might have a pension, but, you know, you say, well, that might not be enough to qualify for a second home. What can I do? Well, we'll look at what you have in, say, a 401k or maybe something you have in annuities. And we'll take that. Let's say it's $600,000. Use a number. We'll divide it over. We take actually a formula with 7 years, which is 84 months. We'll take what you have in assets, divide it over 84 months, which is 7 years. And that figure will be your actual income. And we can use it in addition to what you receive, say, for Social Security if you're retired or pension. So it's almost a hybrid. We'll take what you get from the government in addition to what you have in assets that you're not even drawing on, just money you have sitting in accounts. Could even be technically stocks and bonds. And we'll take that and convert it into income. And so this program, is the asset depletion, is very popular as well, especially for people who are close to retirement age or maybe, you know, cut back a little toward the end of their life before they fully retired. It's a way to get them in homes. So this is another one I think is could be useful for the right client.
I've never heard of that one, Paul. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and we're licensed in all 50 states. I actually did one last week for a client who lived in Massachusetts, bought a second home in North Carolina, had pension income, but she also had money in a retirement account. We were able to convert that money into additional income. She bought a second home in North Carolina, and we can actually do these programs in certain situations with 10% down, even 20% down for sure. So keep that in mind. It's an option out there for people that maybe are looking for the right program for them. And, you know, it allows them to buy that home and they have income streams, but maybe on paper, it's not what it used to be. It's a way to get them in a house. And then, you know, they can always refinance down the road if they like, but it's a way to get them in a program, you know, in a house in the short term. So these are kind of the programs I wanted to mention today.
Yeah. And my mother, she raised me, okay, working in the gig economy. So she was a bartender, she was a caterer, she was in the restaurant industry. And I remember she had so much trouble because she made cash.
Sure.
Right? So long as these folks, Paul, are putting their money into their account, right, for you to see, you can work with them.
That's correct. And someone that you said, the cash industry, let's say they save money for the last 5 years and they have a large amount in their checking account. Guess what? I can convert that into income, even though on paper, maybe their W-2s or their tax returns don't reflect dollar for dollar. And again, in the cash industry tips, we get it. So it's a way to take that money you made, your hard-earned money, and we can convert it essentially into income with its asset depletion program. And it's very popular. It's becoming more popular as we speak.
Interesting. We got about a minute and a half to go. Do you have a quick story you could share of somebody that you just work with?
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously with the one with the woman in North Carolina I mentioned, but I actually have a situation with the investment property. I'm actually working with someone that I know very well who is a broker. And this particular person was looking at hard money loans and found a great property, a two-family home they wanted to purchase. And they asked me about some options. And you know what? I was able to get their loan approved in less than 10 days. And we're going to be closing all said and done in 21 days. And this is using this DSCR loan where we just look at fair market rent. Obviously, the house has to appraise and then the 20% down. And to me, it's almost like a watered down loan, but yet it's a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. But the guidelines in the underwriting is like watered down. I mean, you can close these loans in 2-3 weeks. So literally, I mean, I have someone as we speak doing one. I have another one coming up in Boston in the next couple of days. So these DSCR loans, I think, are going to be even more important now, especially as investors are getting back in this industry. And, you know, rates are still a little high, but I think this program makes it make sense because rents are going up as well. So yes, this is something that's very relevant.
Awesome, Paul. And how do folks at home get in touch with you?
Absolutely. They can call me directly on my personal cell phone. Again, I'm Paul Salcone, North Point Bank. My cell phone number is area code 401-419-9291. They can call me. They can text me. I'm happy to have a conversation with them. And I'm always available, nights, holidays, weekends, wherever it may be.
Awesome, Paul. Thank you for advancing opportunities for our listeners. And coming up next, we got Ted Tapouzis. We got G-Mets moving, and we also got Jennifer Jaber today. So, again, thank you, Paul, and thank you for letting us know about those programs.
You're very welcome, Greg. Nice talking to you. Have a great day now.
All right. Oh, yeah, folks, next up, we got Mr. Ted Tapouzis from Tapouzis and Associates. Say that 10 times fast. Ted, what's going on?
Hey, Greg. How's it going? Good to see you.
Mouthful.
Good to hear you. Oh, I believe you. Mouthful for me, too.
You're Irish, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All day long.
So what do out-of-state sellers have to keep in mind when they sell property in Rhode Island? Tell us about that.
Well, we've got this withholding requirements. The statute is 44 dash, not that you need to memorize this, but 44-30-71.3. And as an out-of-state resident or company selling Rhode Island real property, you have to, you know, you fall under the umbrella of the statute, which requires you to have to show to the Division of Taxation why a withholding of some of your proceeds, and it would be it's 6% of the net proceeds of the sale would be, why we wouldn't need to do that. And so what usually happens, and it happens a lot, I mean, more happens, I'll give a couple examples. I mean, there's the regular person that now has moved out of state and that's selling their property, moved to Florida, let's say, right? And so we get that a lot. That's a very common thing. And then we have like a company that's selling their property or an REO that's liquidating their asset that's in Rhode Island. So I'll kind of like summarize both of them. You know, usually when we have the artist, the person that has just recently relocated. And I have, you know, honestly, you can imagine it happens so often. I just got a message from somebody a couple of seconds ago that is somebody who's a Rhode Islander who hasn't established residency in Florida yet, but he's there. And so that's an important conversation to have with the listing agent, because they need to be aware of this withholding. Because, you know, why would you want to have an extra 6% of your proceeds pulled out of the sale and paid the Division of Taxation, then have to file a return to get some of that money back? The better thing would be to guide them, you know, right before the closing or before the listing to say, don't claim residency. You might be down there. That's fine. You can sign and notarize documents anywhere you are. It doesn't have to be, the state that you eventually will declare as your residency. Just don't declare it yet until the property is sold. And that way we don't have to hold back proceeds from the sale, which is really an inconvenience to that seller. Or hold off on leaving altogether. But I don't think that's necessary either. Just don't declare residency. You're still paying your taxes in Rhode Island. Your income tax, your 1040 and everything else that you file, all these schedules are all going to still show Rhode Island as the residence, you know, because you just sold. So that's a really important consideration. Now, if you've already declared residency because you had to, maybe for work or something, then we just, the goal here is to, or to, in general, I mean, anybody who's handling this side of the transaction for a seller is going to say, all right, look, what is your basis in the property? What did you buy it for? Okay, what are your capital improvements that you put into the property? Let's figure that out. What are the expenses of the sale of this particular sale. Now, you can't call an expense like landscaping, you know, like paying your real estate taxes, paying your water and sewer. That's not a capital expenditure. That's not, you know, something that can fall into this, you know, to whittle the exposure down. It has to be something more than that. And, you know, when you say capital expenditure, you know, you changed, you made an improvement of some sort to the property during your ownership, that would count. That gets added to the basis. And then, you know, we do the math. We take the net sales price after the expenses of the sale, you know, that we're actually doing right now, minus the basis, minus the capital improvements. And now we've got a number that is kind of like the gain. Okay, or it could be the loss, you know, if it's upside down, right? I mean, and you know, that could happen depending on what the market does. You know, like in 2008, there was a lot of upside down transactions, you know, so you know that. And so, so then that form gets filed with the Division of Taxation prior to closing. You can't do it. I mean, you can do it at closing. Like, let's say if the seller just doesn't have their act together, wasn't even contemplating this as being an issue. And they just said, well, you know, just take the 6% of the net without filing these documents. You know, I'll have my CPA file a return and get some of that money back. So that's another option. You can do that. Absolutely. But the better way to do it is whittled it down before, right. So it's a lot coming at you, you know, but, and like we do bank owned work, you know, and so we see this all the time on a bank owned sale, you know, all the, sellers are out of staters, you know, it doesn't make a difference. Even if it's Citizens Bank, they're not Rhode Island, you know, so they're all having to deal, but Citizens Bank is an exception because the law has exceptions, you know, for like if the U.S. Sells a property that they took over through a forfeiture or some other reason, right. If a bank sells their property, a bank. But if it's like an investor of a loan that's, you know, bought a non-performing loan that liquidated it, foreclosed their lien and now is selling the property, that they wouldn't fall under the exception of that statute. So they'd have to pay that withholding. So, you know, sometimes the withholding is a scary thing because imagine it's 6% of the net, sort of like a commission, you know, and nobody wants to pay that kind of a chunk. And also the other little wrinkles that come into play my brother is out of state, but I'm Rhode Island. I'm in Rhode Island. Okay, so now you have to figure out, okay, of the net proceeds of that sale.
By which brother is more handsome? Is that how you figure it out?
I usually win on that, of course.
I'm gonna let him know that.
No, he's the winner there. We just divvy it up based upon what they you know, what the bottom line, you know, division of the proceeds are going to be.
So let's do a quick example. Okay. Yeah. So somebody buys a property, you know, maybe 2 years ago for $300,000 in Warwick.
Yep.
And then they sell it for $500,000 today.
Okay.
So you're talking the net is now $200,000 before any deductions.
Right.
And that's going to be the subject to the 6%.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
So maybe 10 G's goes to the kitty of the state.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's wow. It's a lot.
That's so, a lot of coin.
Yeah. So you really want to evaluate this. Now, if you're, you know, a mass resident, happened a lot during COVID, mass residents bought down here. You know, they figured, why not? I can work remote. They didn't declare Rhode Island as their residency, you know, so now they're selling because they have to be back, you know, full time at the office. You know, this is where it's coming into play. And, you know, you're seeing a lot of people that bought something during COVID now selling their property. I mean, you know, there aren't a lot of transactions, but of the transactions, you see a lot of this out of state, you know, situation. So definitely something to be aware of. And if, you know, you don't want to think about it too late. But if you do think about it too late, of course, there's always the option of just collecting the full 6% of that net number, and not do the calculation on what the basis and the capital expenditures are before the closing. You deal with it afterwards.
Is this unique to Rhode Island, or does every state have their own similar percentage?
It's not unique to Rhode Island. There are a few other states that have it, and it's also similar to the FRIPTA has, the federal government has its own to avoid foreign nationals from selling U.S. property and not, you know, paying the IRS what they're due. So similar concept. But yeah, I think Vermont has it. I think if I'm not mistaken, I think Arizona, I believe, or some of the states out west have it. So it's not something that's completely solely our concept. Absolutely not.
And it's interesting because the state's going to make their money, and you really don't feel it because you have that equity, right? It's not like it's money coming out of your checking account. So it's just another way that they, you know, they skim a little bit, and, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, it's a good case to say move to Rhode Island, right?
Yeah.
You'll save money.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, you'll avoid this thing. Or don't declare residency in another state wherever you're moving until you sold that property.
Gotcha.
That's probably that's what I recommend. That's definitely what I recommend.
Gotcha. And we got a little bit of time left, and I love stories, Ted. So give us a good story on a different topic that's happened recently that pops into your mind.
Oh my God. I'll tell you something that probably, you know, is good for a lot of stories, and that's, and you've heard it too, Greg, cause I know you're very active in real estate. And that's escrow agreements for post-closing repairs, things that are done after the closing. That's not a topic that it's a topic I've done a segment on, you know, several times before. And that is always something that comes up at a closing, always, you know, whether it's just walk-through stuff that, you do your final walkthrough right before you come to the closing to come to our office. And there's, a number of different things that are wrong with the property, or they haven't been repaired, you know, when they were requested to be repaired, early on during the inspection period. So you have those things, but there's other things too, sort of like, for example, we deal with it often because we have a law. A cesspool replacement, with a septic system, you have to do that within 1 year of purchasing a property, and you have holdbacks that are done lots of times, so that the deal can close, a certain dollar amount is set aside. I mean, it does get complicated because, there's so many different things that happen during the installation of a septic system that, what kind of, you have to check the quality of the soil. You gotta see if, you can put, system A in or system B in. You know, you've been through this. I know you're nodding and you know what I'm talking about. And so, so many times, or then there's post installation, there's grading of the landscaping. There's seeding the grass again, there's so many different things. Lots of things that don't get contemplated when the agreement is put together. They just say, all right, look, septic guy tells us that the bill is this much money. We're going to hold back 1.5 times, make sure it's enough. And then after the system is put in, then all these little things come up. Oh, I didn't know that I had to, include also, landscaping as a thing that I needed to be aware of, or seeding or something else, or even the type of system. I mean, type of system should probably be determined, but you never know until you put the shovel in the ground, right? So,
right.
Yeah, so there's always these little things that can come up. So I mean, if it's a story, I would say this is good for a lot of stories, and you just got to be really careful with putting together an agreement like that, making sure that you have the foresight to know like what can come at you.
Thank you, Ted. And as always, quality content from you. Who would have knew that a lawyer would have such good content? So, Ted, thank you. And how do folks get in touch with your office?
They can reach me at Topuzis and Associates, and the phone number is 401-533-9888, or you can look
Awesome.
on the web.
Awesome,
Topuzis
Ted.
and Associates.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's it.
I actually like your website, taclosinglaw.com, so folks can check you out there as well.
Thanks, Greg. That's right. Yeah, appreciate
Awesome.
it.
All right, Ted, we'll see you next time.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds
All
good.
right.
See ya.
Oh yeah, folks, Greg Rice back in action, covering for Emilio Dispirito this morning. And we got George Metz, G Metz Moving and Storage, okay, owner and operator. And George, today let's talk about the one-offs, the oddities, the unique situations. And for example, folks, I hired G Metz because I just finished up my church in Woonsocket, and I have dozens and dozens of brand new appliances at my office in Pawtucket, and I need them all delivered to Woonsocket and to put into the appropriate apartments. So G Metz is going to handle that for me. Now, most specifically, we talk about single family traditional moving, but George, tell us about what else G Metz does for maybe investors, office buildings, commercial property owners that are different than our normal clientele.
Right, yeah, a lot of the time, and actually, I think the last time I was on here with Emilio, we just grazed the surface because we're always talking residential, right? This show specifically hits the residential market, but we do much more than that. So, in your situation, does not sound like a residential move, right? We're not moving any dressers, bureaus, the kitchen stuff. We're going directly after larger appliances that have to get in there. So we do that as well for if you have an office and maybe you're getting a new big copy machine or you're a contractor and you have to get a large format printer. So we deliver even just one-off items like that on the commercial side, as large as, doing cubicle installs. We do all of that. But for the one-offs or the oddities on the residential side, sometimes those are pianos, pool tables, hot tubs,
Cool.
Outdoor swing sets. Sometimes we just get that call. Maybe they moved everything on their own. Maybe they didn't have much to move, but they have, again, those one-offs. We still do those, right? So one-offs, I mean, we've moved antique wooden smoke cigar statues to old antique refrigerators that used to have the ice blocks that would go into them. Actually, how moving originated was from the ice delivery people, is how it originated from. They had the trucks, they had the know-how, and they had the physical strength to do it. So they went from delivering blocks of ice to actually doing moves for people way back in the day. So we still do those one-offs, right? Not as big as a big household, not as labor intensive most of the time, but also depending on what it is. If we're moving a, recently a 600-pound copy machine to a second floor, I mean, it was a minimum charge for us, but it was for people to go out and do it. So we're not going to turn our back for one item, or a bunch of one-offs, right? Refrigerators, right? 12 units or 15 units worth of refrigerators. We can probably accomplish that within a few hours, but also we're going to make sure that we're wrapping everything, protecting everything, making sure the floor is protected, the building is protected. Or again, maybe you're getting, we see this a lot. You get a curbside delivery service
Yes.
for your appliances, your washer, your dryer, maybe even your new bed set, right? You called this company. Oh yeah, we'll deliver it for you. We'll get rid of your old mattress. That's all free. that's what these people are telling you, but they don't tell you that they're not fully coming in. Maybe they just drop it in your driveway, or they put it in your garage if you have one.
Yep.
And that's it. And they leave. And now all of a sudden, what do I do with my stuff? I got to put a tarp on it tonight and find somebody that can get it in the house. They did take my old mattress, but they didn't even bring in my new one. We get those calls a lot. So we help even just on a small delivery, meeting the truck there or hitting it on the way back after we complete something else. So again, it doesn't have to be an apartment to an apartment to a condo, a house to a house. It's specifically what the needs are of that tenant or client, whether it's commercial, residential. But those are the things that we hit on that we really don't talk about that much. The one-offs, the bigger stuff, gun safes, we move those pretty consistently as needed. And again, sometimes you order a nice safe, 600 pounds, 700 pounds, they drop it off to your house. They put it in your garage, your driveway, behind your house because you don't have a garage or a shed. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden you've got to get it down your basement stairs. You know, we pay attention. We make sure we did a old safe for a jewelry company a while back, and the stairway that it was going to in the house was not equipped to handle the weight of the safe.
Right.
So as soon as we got there, it was, hey, we could do this, but you got to get somebody out here to shore these things up, make it a little bit more safe, because it had flex with just myself and another guy walking down it to see where it was going. So you could feel the bounce, you could feel it moving. And I said, sir, before we kill ourselves or put this through your stairs, let's get these things shored up and a little bit more constructed. And he did. So even at that situation, we took the safe back to our facility, had it here for a few days. We got him in touch with a contractor. They put a couple more supports in it. We had it done still within the same week. But we just got lucky because, again, we're not a contractor. We just had the right guy on quick dial, right? And got him out there, got it completed. But those are the things that happen that we come across. But I mean, we've moved odd stuff. We've moved some definitely some weirder stuff that, you know, fish tanks. I mean, no one likes moving all glass fish tank. You know, the fish tanks that don't fit in the back of your car. And again, maybe you get a good deal. You're a saltwater fish guy and you want that bigger saltwater tank. Those are the things that we can come in and help out with. Again, if you're not already working with a fish provider, so to speak, because most of those places, when you start dealing with them, they set you up on an automatic type of situation where they're coming out. Even residentially, they're doing that now, not just in the commercial side. So depending on your needs, we're here and ready to help with it.
What is the most valuable item that you ever moved, George?
I would say it was probably a random piece of art out of a old moldy basement in downtown Providence, out of one of the local universities. We went in, we wrapped up the piece already had brown paper. It's brown paper wrapping around it. And that paper is a non-acid forming paper that keeps moisture off of it. It has like four or five layers of the paper. And it was just maybe 3.5 by maybe 5.5 foot tall piece of art. It was already wrapped. We had no idea. We go in, we're clearing out the basement. This one's going to that library. That's going to go to this building. And we get it to the new location. We're getting everything open. And the art major that was receiving it says, oh, I'm so glad that the facility actually got this over to us. We're very happy for it. Did you realize how much this is valued at? And it was like $2.8 million in a piece of art. And we didn't even know, because the way it was staged, it was in an old, moldy, dusty basement in downtown Providence. And I'm like, wait a minute, that was how much? Nothing happened with it, but it was one of those things where I wish we knew before, because we would have done things differently. But at the same point, the way the people had it secured, we thought it was just a random piece of art that they just threw some old paper over it and throw it in the basement. Other than that, I mean, we've done cars as well. So some expensive cars that we've hauled for people. And, you know, even just some old antiques, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 worth of just furniture that you would come in, sit on, throw your keys on, and not even realize that it was that expensive or valuable.
Interesting. So the normal stuff, the odd stuff, and the expensive stuff, George and his crew will take care of. How do folks get in touch with you?
Best way would be to call the office, 401-383-6399. At that point, anybody at the office who answers will be happy to walk you through the process, go over all your questions, make sure you're getting the answers to those questions, and asking you other questions to be prepared to ask the potential competitors that you're going to make sure that you're educated enough to make the right decision.
And I did a long format interview, folks, with George this past week, and you can look out for that on the Nexus YouTube channel to get to know George and see his facility, see some of his staff in action. So check that out on the YouTube channel for Nexus. And again, George, thank you very much, brother. We'll see you soon.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right. Oh, yeah. What's going on, folks? Again, Greg Rice filling in this morning for my good buddy Emilio DeSpirito. And as always, we have Jennifer Jaber. And Jen, we're going to talk about the top five end of May events, which sounds absolutely gross. We're already through May. That's sad. But what is going on out there?
So lots of food trucks events. One to speak of, Food Trucks Eats and Beats, is at Sons of Liberty event series Friday, May 24th from 3 to 8 p.m. They have a newly renovated, updated tasting room with a greater selection of cocktails, expanded seating, and then they'll have their parking lot will be full of food trucks and music, and they're there select dates until August. But the next one is Friday, May 24th. But if you miss that one, there's other ones. Rogue Island Comedy Spring Fest rolls in for its 10th year, May 23rd to the 27th. There'll be 13 shows across the Newport County and Providence for the first time. So you can come see showcases from some of the best national touring comedians. Venues include the Jane Pickens Theater, Ragged Island Brewing, Top of the Pelham, Rejects Beer Company, The Hyde at the George, and Diego's. And you can get all the details at RhodeIslandComedyFest.com. For the Taylor Swift fans out there, because there's many of them, Friday, May 23rd is a candlelight, a tribute to Taylor Swift, 8:30 to 9:45. It's at the Bishop McVaney Auditorium in Providence. A candlelight concerts bring the magic of live multisensory musical experience, and you can get your tickets now and discover the music of Taylor Swift with the Listesso String Quartet. So that sounds amazing for the Swifties out there. Mm. 2024 is the PVD Artisans Market. The 2024 PVD Artisan Market is May 25th, Saturday, in Lippitt Park from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And it's their 12th year at Lippitt Park, and it features the very best of local artists and fine crafters, as well as fresh fruits and veggies from the Hope Street Market, live music, food trucks, and more. So it's a great chance to check out some of our local artists and local food purveyors. And last but not least, Saturday, May 25th, is also the Aquidneck Oyster pop-up at Narragansett Brewery from 12 to 4. Aquidneck Oyster will be shucking fresh oysters in the tap room. And you can also enjoy delicious beer from Narragansett Brewing. So two Rhode Island staples in one location.
Hmm. And I'm looking here, Jen. The one that's most appealing to me is this Friday, Kansas at PPAC, their 50th anniversary tour.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Can you believe that? I mean, I wish... I wish I was born in the 70s, because the music that my father's generation had was just so much better. And it's great to see these bands are still out there, and they're getting up in age. So I encourage folks to get out there and see some of these bands that maybe you're taking for granted. Oh, they'll be back next year. Oh, Ringo Starr will come back to Providence. You don't know that. So I highly recommend folks get out to PPAC this Friday and check out, Carry On, Wayward Son. What a classic song.
I know. It reminds me of like record players playing when I was younger that my dad would be listening to.
I love it. And then Dave Matthews, that same night tribute band at the Ocean Mist. I mean, I'm a music junkie. That's my thing. So I love that you got a lot of music options out here, a lot of food options, and you know, take advantage. The end of May already, I feel like we're just breezing through.
I know. It's crazy. It's so fast. I feel like we're just talking about like the holiday season, and now suddenly it's summer almost.
It's just so crazy how quick it goes once it gets nice out here. But anything else, Jen, before we let you go today?
Nope, just, you know, keep checking the events calendars. There's lots of recurring events, too, that are nice just to keep, you know, well, I mean, the local businesses tend to thrive in the summertime, but still they do these recurring, you know, dinner specials that are nice to support those as well.
Yeah, and folks, I always mention it. You can advertise, too, on Jen's site. So if you have events or you want to get out there also and put one of your advertisements for your business, just check out her website, riblogger.com. And she'll guide you in the right direction.
Thank you so much.
All right, Jen, we'll talk to you next week.
Have a great week.
All right. All right, folks, again, Greg Rice here, VP GM at Nexus Property Management, filling in for my good buddy Emilio DeSpirito. Thank you again to our guests today, Paul Salcone from North Point Bank. We had Ted Tapuzis from Tapuzis and Associates, George Metz of G Metz Moving, and Jennifer Jaber from RI Blocker. I'll be seeing you guys around the bases. And again, thank you to Emilio DeSpirito at Angle and Volkers.